Hands Off Venezuela, Death to American Imperialism. These were some of the slogans being chanted outside of the U.S. Embassy, downtown Montreal, over the weekend. Sunday, January 4th, about 70 people gathered outside of the United States to Canada Embassy on Stanley Street, downtown Montreal, to oppose America's military intervention in Venezuela. The news broke on Saturday that the United States led a military operation in Venezuela violating international law to capture President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Sheila Flores, and bring them to the United States to face drug and weapons charges. It is estimated that 40 Venezuelans were killed in that operation. This comes after more than 20 military strikes against boats in the Caribbean Sea and Eastern Pacific Ocean that the United States claims were smuggling drugs. Over 80 Venezuelans have been killed in those strikes, many of them fishermen. U.S. President Donald Trump has stated that the U.S. is going to, quote, make a lot of money, unquote, referring to Venezuela's rich oil reserves. Here in Montreal, local activist Celeste Trianon organized the rally condemning U.S. intervention. Here's Trianon.
We're talking about attacks on sovereignty, which is the foundational voting brick of international law. 40 people were killed yesterday morning. 40 people died because the United States decided that their lives were worthless. This is the state of the road right now. We're now living in the rule of the jungle, not the rule of law, nor the rule of human rights.
Trianon and the activists want their message heard in the U.S. Embassy, but also want to see Canadian officials condemn the U.S. action in South America.
Condemn the U.S. Start unpairing our public policy, our foreign policy, from the United States. If it means cutting diplomatic relations, so be it. We need to become an independent state.
At one point, a group of counter-protesters began to shout at the rally, demanding that they, quote, don't speak about Venezuela, unquote. Within the Venezuelan diaspora, the possible removal of President Maduro is controversial, with some celebrating his capture by the U.S. This group of counter-protesters would not speak with CJLO and left the rally after a few minutes. Here is Sandra Cordero. She was attending the protest as a supporter. Here she is speaking on U.S. intervention in Latin America.
Of course, I'm so sad that people are killed. People are killed for oil. The United States has a problematic way of diplomacy. It's not working because they are bullies. They are seen as bullies in the international. In international diplomacy.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Welcome back to North-South Hockey on CGLO 1690 AM. I'm Avery Beaumont, and I'm joined by Will Shukri. We're here to talk about the NHL and all things hockey. This is CGLO's newest hockey show. How you feeling? It's funny that we're getting into some more that we started this with some news today about some international politics, and we're getting into more international politics, aka the Olympics, juniors. I love proxy war in the morning, don't you?
Oh my god. Well, luckily, in the World Juniors now, Canadians and Americans can't say anything at all.
God bless. Honestly, I was so relieved.
If everyone loses, then nobody wins, right?
Yeah, so the World Junior Championships just wrapped up in Minnesota this past week. It was a big upset. Chechia once again, it shouldn't be an upset at this point because Chechia kind of
it's expected.
I'm very sorry, Canadians, but Chechia does own you a little bit. And they managed to advance to the gold medal game for the first time since 2023, where they were very swiftly crushed by Team Sweden, who had their first gold in a while. So yeah, it was great. You said Chihar from Czechia was MVP of the tournament. Odd choice. If you pick a Czech, I would have picked a couple others, but no, it was great. Jets prospect Sasha Budiemi, I don't know how to say that. I'm sorry. Scored the game winner, and someone to keep in mind from this tournament, I will say, as I'm partial to Team Czechia because I got some family back there, but I definitely think everyone should keep an eye out for Thomas Galvis. He is a very reliable defenseman for his age. He's in his third year of draft eligibility. And he put up a 9-point performance at that tournament. He was only second to Zane Parekh in scoring for defensemen.
Yeah, he was gross. He's a little undersized for defensemen, probably the reason why he's now in his third year of draft eligibility. But I'm a Habs fan. I'm never going to say that you're too small to be a defenseman in the NHL. So,
how did your prospects make out? You were watching anybody?
In my opinion, Michael Hage was the best forward in the tournament.
Nasty. Period. That nasty period. Goal he scored against Czechia in the opening round. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, he was the starting center for the media's all-star team out of the Worlds, right? He was the best forward on Team Canada. Other than Zane Parekh, he was the best player on Team Canada. And he was on a line with Gavin McKenna, who we're looking at to be a Macklin Celebrini, Connor Bedard, you know, whatever, a tank so you can get him kind of first overall pick. Well, Michael Hage outplayed him night in, night out, the World Juniors. Mm-hmm. So Habs fans can probably take some solace in that. You know, I think a lot of Habs fans anyway, we see the tournament more as an opportunity to see our prospects than Canada necessarily. Because if we're being honest, Team Canada has kind of sucked to watch in this tournament for the last like 4 years because they don't put together a team. They just say, who are the most electric Canadian 16-year-olds? And they put them together and it ends up they play like that. I think Canada got what they deserved in this tournament.
I do think so as well, because I have a hard time rooting for the Canadians. If anyone's not familiar, I'm American and I'm so sorry for it. But
Hey, you didn't do the intro this time. You're an American hockey fan.
Yeah, we got a Canadian, we got an American. But so I don't normally root for the U.S. at these things because, in my opinion, we have enough. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to.
That's what I'm saying. Give us something.
This is kind of like my way of, you know, reparations in small ways. But like, I have a hard time rooting for Canada, though, because it's like they pick the most arrogant 16-year-old boys on the planet. And I just can't. Like, Porter Martone got a unsportsmanlike conduct after he scored an empty net to secure in that opening game against Czechia. Immediately just goes and shoves Jiříček by the bench. And I'm like, this is what I mean. This is emblematic of, like, and it's also why they won't win, because they're just flooding with, like, star power or, like, whoever has, like, the flashiest skill. Not necessarily all the time, because Parekh was left off last year. But they do this so often where they'll flood it with skill, and then it's just too many cooks in the kitchen and none of them can, like, make a soup together. You know what I mean?
And this is why Michael Hage was the best player. He was the only player who played like he was a teammate in that tournament.
That's why the Czechs had the edge, because those guys have been playing together since they were kids. A lot of them are already in the men's league in Czechia. And you can tell they're playing as a unit, as a team, as a group. And that's how you win. And this is a debate we can get into now, because Olympic rosters came out for Team USA and Team Canada, as well as Team Latvia, France, Czechia, you know, got a shout out.
Yeah, not to snub those nations. Like, come on.
No, yeah. But we will be getting into the two popular girls right now. Because Habs fans do actually have, at least they can find some solace in Hague, because your boy was left off. Cole Caulfield did not make the Olympic roster.
And I wouldn't have put him on the Olympic roster either. What are you going to do with Cole Caulfield on a fourth line? What are you going to do with Cole? There's so much discourse around the rosters of these tournaments. And you know, you're hearing a lot of journalists, a lot of radio guys criticize both Canada and the U.S. just because they seem willing to invest in grit. Guess what? Hockey teams need grit. I understand that you shouldn't be looking at this tournament as an opportunity to put together the toughest team. No, you're supposed to put together the best hockey club. And guess what? If Cole Caulfield's on your fourth line, that's not a super effective fourth line. He's not going to crash and bang. He's not a defensive shutdown forward. Yeah. And he's not a top six player on this USA team.
that's the thing is, like, you like everyone's getting mad about their particular snubs, and in some cases, like, the omissions make more sense. Like, I feel the same way about Adam Fox, right, where he's actually injured now, so I don't I don't know if that had something to do with it, why he wasn't. I think he was maybe listed as an alternate, but he was left off of Team USA, and the thing is, a lot of people were like, oh, Team USA is so stupid, like, Miracle ruined them, and, like, they have this this ideology where they're not taking their best. The thing is, Adam Fox does not have a role on that team.
No.
So I don't really...
Unless it's a shutdown shot blocker. And as a Rangers fan, you don't want to see him do that anyway.
Please leave his knee alone. I'm really worried about his knees. Right. So, like, I don't mind that. I think you have to be qualified about this of, like, you know, is Cole Caulfield going to actually fit? He's not used to playing that kind of role.
No.
It's not going to be helpful.
He's a star player. He's a goal scorer. He's an offensive catalyst. He's not a crash and bang grinder.
Yeah. But then people get into, of course, like, oh, who would they have taken off the roster? Mm-hmm. And I just got to say, with Team USA specifically, I am annoyed to see this. And this is the New York in me. I'm so sorry. But stop with the Vincent Trocheck slander. It needs to end now. That is the exact kind of guy you want on your third or fourth line at the Olympics. Oh, my God. Like, that is – he is a face-off lock. He is such a good two-way forward. He can do shutdown. He has grit. Like, that's the kind of guy. So you have to pick and choose and like, understand that part – like, even though you want all the star talent, you do have to have some team structure. I will say, fair enough, JT Miller on that roster, ooh. That's where
listen,
I would
if he can dedicate
in.
Himself
Jason
to 9
Robertson.
Minutes a night going 110% on the fourth line, JT Miller works. Because at the end of the day, he's a big body who can skate, I guess. But it's just whether he's willing to – put in any work, because that's not exactly what he's known for.
Oh, well, with this, it's like Christmas. You know what I mean? Oh, he probably wrote the Canadian Tears line in that Team USA spot.
Yeah,
you know,
did.
Like,
it wasn't Austin Matthews, that's for sure.
Oh, they specifically could not let him say that line. They had to shove Eichel in there because all the rest of them were on Canadian teams. As far as Team Canada goes, I feel similarly about Trocheck with Anthony Cirelli.
Yeah, I would want no one else on that fourth line as a centerman.
I think he was playing on the third at Four Nations, so I'll see where they end up putting him. But
Suzuki might bump him down.
So, yeah, but they're not. Coop's not going to separate him and Hagel, and they have just been like,
it's true,
lethal.
And Hagel, they should be looking at him as a defensive shutdown forward anyway. He's one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL. And Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon are on the team. You don't need him to be point per game.
No. And Anthony Cirelli and Braden Hagel are like what probably the most underrated duo
in the
NHL. They're
the best penalty killing duo in the NHL, in my opinion.
They have like the chemistry of like a lot. Like, it's so rare you get like people who just you can tell they intuitively understand each other's game. Like, when they are on the ice together, they know every like micro gesture. They just know each other's game so well. They literally will like post comments on their friends on like other teammates' Instagram accounts, like signed Tony and Hagues. Like,
right.
They are a unit. So I'm really glad to see both of them make that roster. It's so deserved, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, especially with Tom Wilson being injured, maybe Brandon Hagel's going to have a huge role on this team.
Yeah. 2025 was the year of Brandon Hagel. That was like his like, you know, debutante debut.
Yeah.
Which I'm so happy to see, because I've been here since the Chicago trade being like, no, there's something there. But yeah, I think it's an interesting debate of how do you structure an Olympic team? Do you go for best available, or do you actually try to create a roster? And I think the difficulty is, like, I'm annoyed about things like Jason Robertson not making Team USA. And like Caulfield, I'd like.
You can see an argument. Sure, he's third amongst American players in points right now, and
exactly.
He's not on the team. Like, there's certainly an argument there. It's just whether they were going to commit to him being in a top six role, and I wouldn't. I don't think.
Probably not. But I mean, this is the difficulty. Is you can see it with juniors this year. You can see the problem of only putting stars on your team, because that's Canada's issue.
Yeah, and it was a bad team.
Yeah,
it was a bad team.
So yeah, I look at Canada's roster and I'm like, dang, you got like way more like killer talent on there in the forward group at least. However, is that I don't know, the juniors really like puts a dent in that argument. I don't know. I don't know what we're gonna see, but I did did get a good chuckle out of the Tom Wilson inclusion. So, yeah, I just I'm worried about this tournament. I mean, I don't know if you caught the Winter Classic, but that was basically like a military parade for Team USA.
I saw clips of that.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. palm trees and the army, two things you associate with hockey, right?
Oh, my God. Like, yeah, it was full. It was
full. Don't get me started on the Winter Classic happening in... Listen, just have different names for the classics, okay? The Heritage Classic happens in Canada. No, make it the Winter Classic happens in the Northern Hemisphere. The Southern Hemisphere can have, I don't know, the lake.
The Snowbird Classic.
Sure.
it's
all Canadians at the games anyway, I guess. Okay, yeah.
Well, it's all Rangers fans too, because I will say, funniest part about the Winter Classic was the fact that they do that full, like, fireworks show and hyping up the members of Team USA like they're soldiers about to go off to war. They do all of that, and then a Swedish-Iranian man scores a hat trick. Mika Zibanejad is the first player in Winter Classic history to score a hat trick, which I will never shut up about, ever.
That's an incredible stat.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive, and I will get into the Rangers in a little bit, but if Mika's coming back, he's coming back strong. But God, that Winter Classic, I'll just never forget that all happened in Miami the day before Maduro was kidnapped.
Oh,
cultural symbols are everywhere in this sport, guys. Well, I think we're on that note.
Throw to an ad break on that.
We're
going
to head to an ad break, folks. We're getting used to the transitions here. We'll be right back on CGLO 1690 AM.
JLO at Concordia University. Enjoy!
Au cinéma public, nous proposons une programmation en salle composée de films d'ici et de nouveautés internationales, de classiques et des pépites méconnues, ainsi que de courts-métrages et des séances familiales. Nos billets sont parmi les moins chers à Montréal, 10$ au tarif régulier et 8$ pour les étudiants, les enfants et les aînés. Nous offrons également des cinécartes de 6 billets pour encore plus d'économies. Venez nous voir à la Casa d'Italia, juste en face de la station Jean Talon. Et rendez-vous au cinémapublic.ca pour découvrir notre programmation. Le cinéma public pour un cinéma vivant.
You're horrid, you're ghastly, and I love you true. So here are some presents I'm sending to you.
If you consider yourself a goblin, ghost, or a ghoul, then you should listen to Deadbeats on Fridays from 3 to 4 with your ghost at the most, me, Pretty Dead Boy. I play most things emo and alternative, and I promise it's just to die for.
You're the coolest little monster that ever put the spook on me.
You're listening to North South Hockey on CGLO 1690 AM. I'm Avery Beaumont, and I have Will Shukri here, and we will be getting into some of our teams now in a little bit. But first, before, just to kind of put a pin on World Juniors, Zane Parekh's in a lot of hot water right now, and I think it's completely unnecessary.
Oh, my God.
For a league that prides itself on being, like, tough and resilient, we're a bunch of babies. Oh, my God.
He's got to get out of Calgary.
I think a lot of people.
A lot of people
Calgary.
Should get out of Calgary.
A lot of people. We need
point.
To like start a little program That's there. Rescue some lost
Send
souls.
Send them to Toronto or something.
Yes, because that's the best solution for that kid right now, who's currently getting flamed just for saying the league needs more personality, an objective fact. He's getting flamed by Calgary media, let's put him in Toronto. Steve Simmons will love him. Love him.
God.
Oh my God, that's how you traumatize a kid.
I've got too many stories about Steve Simmons as somebody who worked in sports media in Toronto the last 4 years. And we're not going to say any of them. Moving on.
So Parekh made a comment while he was at Juniors just saying, you know, like talking about his own game, his own style. And he was saying, you know, like the league needs some more personality. A lot of these players come across like robots.
Which
in
they do. Yep.
No one can dispute that. That is an objective fact. Everyone says it. Every commentator says it. And of course now, because a kid says it, and particularly because a brown kid said it, let's be frank right here, he's getting such scrutiny over just the most minor thing. And it's just a bit much. Like, he had to apologize.
He had to apologize. This is the problem. Like, sure, if you want to have like a conversation with him internally and just be like, hey, man, we know we're all boring. Like, maybe don't say it out loud. That's one thing. Making him go to the media with his tail tucked between his legs and say, I'm sorry, daddy, is not okay. It's not okay.
He's a young...
Calgary also sucks.
Yes, that's the thing.
They're bad. And he is playing extremely well.
It's just ridiculous to think about, like, grown men being upset.
Right.
Basically, a teenager's comments.
A teenager's comments, yes.
It, like, you wouldn't, like... You wouldn't see this in any other league. You wouldn't see this in any other major sports league. It's so petty. It's so ridiculous because that's something you resolve with your team.
Zane Parekh or Allen Iverson.
Oh, God. But, like, why? Just send a text and be like, hey, man, that kind of – also, but, like, here's the thing. It is a bit of a lady doth protest too much, methinks, situation of – okay, well, if you're the, if the Flames locker room is that hurt by that statement and they're taking it that personally, doesn't that say something? Doesn't that mean that you actually – like, there's a little truth there?
How long does it take to get the Sean Monahan out of the room? Oh. Listen, Sean Monahan's great, but he also moonlights as an English teacher.
Which I love. I love
I would also moonlight as an English teacher. Yeah, like, I can't talk crap.
Yeah, I just I hate that this like media cycle is always so like
lame.
It's
lame is what it is.
It's not interesting. Like
forget the most interesting thing about the best player in the league is that he's got a heated driveway.
There's some
that's the biggest Connor McDavid story of the last 10 years. He's got a heated driveway.
You have Steve Simmons stories you can't share. I have Connor McDavid stories I can't share. But
Avery installed Connor McDavid's heated driveway.
Yes, actually, I helped Lauren Kyle design that beige nightmare, that showroom.
That beige nightmare.
Penthouse.
Oh, God.
Ugh. Not a penthouse, but, you know, everyone go look up Connor McDavid's architectural digest video where he shows off his home. I'm surprised if people listening to this haven't seen it, but God, is it worth your watch. And talk about robots in the league. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It looks like he learned how to smile in a lab.
Well, Nathan MacKinnon's on pace for 70 goals. All he does is eat salad.
God forbid a carb even be thought of. So let's transition into some local covers. Let's talk about the Habs. How are they doing, Will? How is your team faring? What do they need to do heading into this year? What is your hope?
The Habs are slowly sending me to therapy.
Well, at least something finally did. Thank God.
You know, I've been in denial for a long time. Who would have guessed Cole Caulfield's going to be that? Listen, I want to be like super negative here, but I shouldn't be super negative. This is just about the youngest team in the NHL. They're third in the Atlantic. They're playing well. This week they managed 4 out of a possible 6 points. They've had 4 comeback victories in their last 7 games. All of these are positives. But holy cow, is this team really ready for a 7-game exit in the first round? This is what it's looking like. There's no polish. There's no polish. And I understand that there's no polish. First off, you're missing half of the top 6. Like if we were looking at this team last year without Alex Newhook, Kirby Dach, Caden Gooley, and Patrick Laine, this is a lottery team.
Yeah.
A year ago today, right?
So it's an improvement.
Huge improvement. Well, I mean, they're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They're 7th in the NHL right now. I can't come here and complain. I can't perpetuate the Habs media stereotypes and come on and say it's all terrible where we've got 23 wins in 40 games.
Oh, like, my God. Should I play you a song of the world's tiniest violin?
My lobster is too buttery. My steak is too juicy. My wine glass runneth over. Right.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this team is so inconsistent. There will be games where it looks like they've never practiced together. And then there are games where you see the high-level systems that Marty St. Louis is implementing. Because this is a coach that doesn't work off of game plans. He works off of concepts. And sure, the players are good at what they do. If you collect talented players with good hockey IQ, you can preach concepts. But sometimes when half the team is injured and half the team just came up from the Laval Rocket, it's harder to preach concepts. Sometimes when your game has fallen apart, concepts are a little bit too abstract. Sometimes you need to just finish your checks and defend the neutral zone. Sometimes you should just flip it to the blue line instead of trying to make a fantastic breakout pass to spring Nick Suzuki on a breakaway. Sometimes you need to just play hockey instead of being amazing, talented hockey players. And I think that's where the Habs need to move here.
Well, it's like, imagine if you had like a bunch of like temp workers, like at your place of business, and like a bunch of people on like paternity, maternity leave, and there's a bunch of temp workers there, and then you're like, yeah, let's get them in the group Christmas photo. They will definitely be here in a month. Yeah. They will definitely be here. Like, I think you need to recognize, like, you are playing with a lot of the Rockets, like, yeah. And it's also good that this
and a bunch of depth rentals.
If this is happening now, this is when you want it to happen now. And I think it's important for success in the playoffs to go through adversity during the regular season. I think there's a reason why President's Trophy winners typically don't do well in the playoffs. And I think it's because if you're giving like that full all season and you don't even just have like your rough patches where you retool and you figure out what to do when you're down, you figure out how to get rid of like certain mistakes, that preps you better for the playoffs than just a constant like winning streak, in my opinion. Because you could win, like you could be the Avs all season, and then by the time the playoffs come around, like, oh no, you might have to change your power play on the fly. You might have to like adjust some of the lines or whatever. Like, at least you can work that out now in kind of like the lull of January hockey.
Yeah. Resilience is an important lesson to learn here, for sure. And these kids are getting it in spades. Speaking of the Avalanche, by the way, it looks like they're doing this effortlessly. Like we just talked – yeah, I totally agree. Normally the President's Trophy winners, they went too hard in the regular season. To me, it looks like the Avalanche are just – like this is a 9-to-5 for them right now. They've got 4 regulation losses in 42 games.
The Avs, well, this is so interesting about the standings right now is that every team is at .500 still.
Just about, yeah.
No team has more than 26 wins except for the Avalanche, who have 31. There is like no other team. This is the Colorado Avalanche League now, basically. And as someone who got into hockey through watching the Tampa Bay Lightning, I have feelings about that. But you can't deny the talent. It's probably one of the best teams ever iced in the show. It's undeniable how good they are this year.
We're going to see what it's like without Mackenzie Blackwood.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Although I don't think they're dependent on goaltending as a team.
But he's been lights out.
He's definitely – he's leading the league, I think, in goals against average. Doing really well, but
the Avalanche still have not allowed 100 goals on the season, by the way.
Well, I
mean,
more
than halfway through.
Looking at the records of all of these other teams in the league, I'm not surprised. Like, I love this season though, because I like not knowing who's going to do well in the playoffs. Yeah. I hate a season where, like, yes, the Avs are predicted right now, but like, they do have to physically play against other people and you don't know what that's going to look like. Who's going to have their Panthers Cinderella story run, you know, kind of thing. So I really like when it's up in the air like this, because nothing I hate more than going through like when Vegas won the cup and it's like all season, you know, Vegas is going to win the cup and there's nothing interesting, nothing like that. That's why the Panthers, like that's why that cup run that year was so interesting to watch, because it was the only thing that was like unexpected about that season. So the Avs are doing really well, but I would rather not just like have, you know, like nail in the coffin by December that, oh yeah, obviously they're going to win. I think putting in this much effort in the regular season, even if it is effortless, even if it is just their 9-to-5, you never know with Landeskog. You never know with, you know, injuries come up. And
Landeskog's going to be out for weeks, apparently, with an S on the end. And not Kevin Weeks's forehead. Weeks as in the amount of time. And Kevin Weeks did not report it, for the record.
Gotcha. We will be tuning into Kevin Weeks' lovely kitchen sink broadcast once the trade deadline comes up here in about a
Can't
month,
wait to see
2 months.
Kevin Weeks in some liminal space in Chicago, man. Kevin Weeks in the back rooms of the Baltimore airport.
Oh my gosh. I love that man so much. So
that man needs to be taught how to do social media. I think
he does social media better than most people.
At this point, it is the shtick. Yeah, at this point, he has to. If I see Kevin Weeks and it looks like a normal human being is taking a video of himself, I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
Skeptical.
I'll never forget he broke the Shesterkin contract. Was some piece of information about it while he was like at like the Nickelodeon Adventure Park with his children. So SpongeBob's just in the background as he's like, Igor Shesterkin will be the highest paid goaltender in NHL history. I'm like, wow, okay, this is, I love this sport. It is so deeply unserious. Speaking of Shesterkin, though, we can get into, if you're cool with that, we can talk about the New York
Rangers.
It's
your trauma, man, not mine.
We've done 2 of these shows so far, and I'm trying not to talk about the New York Rangers, because I recognize this is Montreal radio, and
right.
I'm not welcome.
Like you don't have a Ryan McDonough sticker.
Look, that's
staring me in the face.
That's where we can unite on one thing. We unite over like Ryan McDonough, Mikhail Sergachev, that sort of thing. Like a lot of Rangers have, or not, Sergachev's not even a Ranger. He will be one day. I'm calling it now. So Igor Shesterkin has been placed on injured reserve. He will continue to be evaluated after it looked like he did something to his leg. It looked like he tweaked something more so than he had.
It was a non-contact.
Yeah.
He was not hit in the crease.
Paterka, like, came up to him during the Mammoth game on Monday. And, he was clearly in pain. He left the game. It was really funny because someone came by Jonathan Quick afterwards and he, like, fully got out of the net and shoved them. He was like, you are not messing with me either. So Shesterkin's out.
And it looks like a knee.
It looks like knee. And they said it's not worst case scenario.
Yeah, which means it's not a torn knee.
You know, like we are dependent on goaltending, so that is cause for concern. However, I have been pretty satisfied with the team's play, especially like this past month. Like they're middle of the league right now. Yeah. Like they're not great, they're not terrible, and that's kind of all I could want after last season. Is just I see how the kids are working out there, how good Laba's doing. You know, how they're really, like, finding chemistry again and learning to be friends. But here's the thing. James Dolan, owner of the New York Rangers, a man of, just Google that man. There's a lot that comes up. But he did his first interview in, like, 3 years. He went on some local New York radio.
Because he owns failing New York sports franchises. You don't give interviews very often if you can avoid it.
He basically from what
also owns the Knicks, for those who don't know, which are a bigger deal than the Rangers.
He mostly talked about the Knicks on that. We kind of got the short end of the stick, which, like, fair enough, because I don't really want
to. But according to hockey reporters, he didn't even talk about the Knicks. He was just there for New York.
Of course.
Which is hilarious.
Of course. So he said, the culture does not turn around overnight. That was his resounding thing. It was a vote of confidence for general manager Chris Drury, a vote of confidence for coach Mike Sullivan. He's basically admitting what we all knew. He said, I think the team last year didn't really believe in themselves, and that makes it hard. To hear James Dolan, who is such a volatile personality, start talking like he's read a Brené Brown book and be like, you know, the mental – it's like when I saw Tortorella, like, talking about how the mental game matters. I'm like, what happened to you guys? Like, what is this?
Go to therapy or something?
No, I think they just got a new script from their PR assistant, honestly. But, like – the thing that drove me up a wall about this is he said, you have to be patient. As an owner, you have to be patient. The guy set out a plan. When I get impatient is when we veer off the plan and reach for the shiny new thing. Oh, yeah. Like when you fired the team president and general manager after Tom Wilson stole your lunch money. You know, a lot of patience exercise, a lot of restraint there. Like half of these random trades, like sending Buchnevich to the Blues, wasn't James Dolan getting tired and fed up of all these Euro skill guys on his team? I just can't with that. Like it boggles my mind to hear this suddenly new enlightened take from New York. But I mean, honestly, that is what he's saying is true. I just don't believe that his organization is capable of executing that.
At least you can take solace in the fact that money isn't the issue in New York.
Never will be. You know a thing or two about that as a Habs fan. Are you guys third in the league? Because I know the most valued teams, it's like the Leafs and then the Rangers and then would it be the Habs?
Then it's the Habs normally.
It'd be the Habs or the Bruins probably. Yeah.
But the Molson family does well.
I've never thought about that. Never thought they might.
Don't you forget, when you go to Scotiabank Arena, Molson is the beer of the Maple Leafs.
Oh. Well, maybe that's why it sucks.
every time Leafs fans buy a beer in Scotiabank, the Habs see profits.
Oh, that's terrifying to think about.
Take that to the ticket box there. Yeah. $400 for the nosebleeds because you got to pay off Jeff Molson of the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, man. Other things about the Rangers, Adam Fox is on long-term injured reserve.
Yeah, again.
Again. Yeah. He will not be able to play until January 31st.
Which you predicted like 3 weeks ago.
Because the problem is
he was broken.
he's been broken since last season because they played him through injury when everything was going bad. That's why I am so angry. I think we talked about this the first episode, but I'm so angry that he was sent to Four Nations to begin with because he embarrassed himself on a world stage because he was not up to full form.
No, it was bad.
It was bad.
It was bad.
And so I'm whenever Fox goes on injured reserve, I'm like, which is a regular occurrence now, I'm just like, let him have some rest. Let him have some rest because I don't want to see our best defenseman get overworked. I don't want this to be a Quinn Hughes situation. I don't want to see him playing 24 minutes every single night, which, by the way, Quinn Hughes is still doing on the Wild. I think
that's what Lane Hutson's doing on the Habs right now. It's terrifying. 25 and a half minutes per game this week.
Sometimes coaches need to learn how to tell players no. That's my opinion. Sometimes you need to tell a guy no.
The problem is the Habs are kind of bad.
Well, that's the thing with Fox.
Lane Hudson's really, really good.
Do you want to rely on Hudson as a crutch, though? Do you want it to become that Matthew situation of, like, they are just looking to him to save the game when...
Well, what we're looking at here is just this team isn't complete, right? Yeah. David Reinbacher and Adam Engstrom are the solutions to the problem. Yeah. They're just not ready yet.
I heard Gouli's practicing with the team again.
Yeah.
So yeah. Maybe
that poor kid, man. And those, you look at some players with the injury history, like Fox is actually a good example of this, the knee and the back.
Yeah.
Those are two issues that just bug you, right?
Everything does, because, I mean, the wrist with Matthews, too.
Yeah, the wrist, that's a great example with Matthews. With Gouli, this poor kid, he's missed like 60% almost of his NHL games in his career now. Not a single one of the injuries are linked.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
That's
one of them.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, like, this one is a fractured foot from a shot block, right? One of the most common injuries in the league. It's just bad luck. Bad luck after bad luck. And at some point, you wonder, is it bad luck, or is his parents' house built on a burial ground? Is, like, what did Caden Gouli do in juniors? You know, did he, like, piss off some spirits, you know? Do we need an exorcism for Caden Gouli? What needs to happen?
There needs to be some sage in the Habs locker room. Right. A little bit of incense going and the bell.
Is that how Calgary got rid of the Monahan?
I don't think they have.
Clearly
honestly.
Not. They're still
Clearly
too
not.
Boring.
Enough
Sean Monahan slander. I love Sean Monahan.
I don't know why you're coming for
him. He's an English teacher.
Yeah, but I love that. So is Brandon Hagel said he would be an English teacher if he didn't play hockey.
Yeah,
I love my guys who know how to read. It's so rare in this league that we have those. But I will say about the Habs, one time a hockey writer I knew was saying, you know, the Habs are so cursed because of all the injuries. I think it was like after Doc or Slavkovsky
Set
was out.
Set the record 2 years in a row, 2022 and 2023 set the record for man games lost due to injury.
But think about saying the Habs are a cursed franchise in a writer's room of a bunch of hockey writers.
Yeah,
like
tough.
The shouts that came, it was one of the most like heated arguments ever.
We've got more Hall of Famers than some teams have all-stars in their history.
You guys are the most ubiquitous franchise in this sport. Like, you guys are the symbol of hockey. So I'm so sorry that you're going through a little bit of a rough patch here, but I think all your cups will be fine. Just give them a little polish. Like, it's ugh. I
just look. Go polish your Stanley Cups.
Go polish your
That's
plaques. Go polish your
one.
Plaques. Like,
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah.
But they are. Here's the thing. After seeing all this, the current iteration of the Habs are a little cursed.
For sure, a little cursed.
A little cursed.
A little cursed. I've made the joke a couple of times that Marty St. Louis, you know, while he was coaching Pee Wee or his kid or whatever he was doing, you know, he did some got some bad juju attached to him. Now we can't shake it.
Yeah. I'm sorry for the maybe it's like the lingering Rangers stink. God. Maybe that's it.
God,
you know,
can't get Chris Kreider out of our frickin' dressing room.
All right, so we can talk more about the actual like standing in the league and stuff like that now at this point because we are reaching January. This is the part where everyone wakes up and remembers that hockey is going on. Yeah. We have the Olympics next month. We have the trade deadline right after that,
And the NBA is getting really boring. So that's when hockey does well.
This is very true, very true. Because truly, we benefit off of the NBA. This is what happened in the 90s. The Bulls obviously were good for the NBA. But the NBA did have a dip in ratings for a little bit. And that's when hockey really got popular for a second.
Yeah. Well, Michael Jordan saved the sport.
Yes.
That's why he is the GOAT. Yeah. Listen, we're not talking basketball. I'm not getting into this.
Look,
I don't. We're not sucking me into this. May I'll show up on Death of the Midrange next week, maybe. It was a plug.
Yeah, a plug. Listen to Death of the Midrange on CGLO. So everyone's at .500. Who knows what? Who? Okay. Besides the Avs, we can talk about the Avs right now and just. It'll be the same conversation over and over. They're really good. They're probably going to the final.
Right.
We've never seen a team like this. However, they did lose to the Tampa Bay Lightning last night. Did lose.
By more than one goal, which is saying something for the Colorado Avalanche.
It was.
They lost by two goals.
A gorgeous 4-2 win in regulation. I was worried that was going to go to OT. It was tied a lot. But Anthony Cirelli got the empty net insurance when they had to go ahead at the end of the game. Darren Radish continues to stun in new hockey games, which Will is increasingly bewildered by. It's kind of incredible. He had, like, seeing some of the shots he had last night, I'm like, this is, it was Coop's, by the way, it was like Coop's like 1,000th game.
It was.
And so they did, by the way, no one does like ceremonies and tributes like Tampa. They'll take up a full half hour before a game starts just playing a video. Every time I'm like, oh, they're honoring someone. Okay, I can go put my laundry in the dryer. Like, I got some time here. But they were spotlighting how it was head coach John Cooper's 1,000th game. Very few in the NHL. He's the fifth in the NHL to do that with one team. He's probably this, in my opinion, he's this generation's Bowman. Like, I don't think there's anyone comparable to him. And I think Darren Radish is like such a good example. That's Cooper. That is Cooper teaching a guy who is at like kind of a more middling level that he can play to at that high level. Yeah. He can be on that power play with Kucherov, and he can set him like the. I think
he's got 9 points in his last four games. Darren Radish has 9 points in his last four games. He had a hat trick 2 games ago.
Tampa just knows how to embolden players. Like, guys like Anthony Cirelli. Cirelli was like a 7th or 6th round draft pick. Hagel was – people thought Hagel was a crazy trade at the time. But they just – like, they see things in these unsung players, and they know how to activate it. And like, I think it's just – it's coaching. Like, it really is. And so – I just wanted to bring up the Lightning again because I want to do that, but
it is our show. You can do things just because you want to do them.
Yeah. I most of my life I'm trying to figure out how to work the Tampa Bay Lightning into conversation. Anytime you're like,
you're really in the right place for that, man. Yeah.
Well, I think I was asking about Barry Boulet one time, and is he still in the Rockets?
Yeah, Barry Boulet. Yeah. No, he's not.
He's somewhere else now. But I was like, he was what a legend. And you were like, how do you know who that is? And I'm like, if you played for the Tampa Bay Lightning at any point in your career, I probably know most of your stats. But I don't think – basically my point is I don't think we can count Tampa out, which would be really funny if we got – that would say so much about this league if we got another rematch final. But, like, they are just consistent. With Coop at the bench, they are always going to be a threat. And given how garbage the Eastern Conference is this year, it's truly anyone's game to represent. Yeah. And I want
to – parody to a fault is what's happening this year.
I don't think it's a fault. I think it's fun.
It makes for good hockey. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. But
I think some of the teams would like to maybe less parody at the moment. I think a couple of the teams might want a little less.
So who do you want to jump up a little bit? Who do you think has, besides the Avs, who do you think has the ability to actually make a run this playoffs?
It's tough. Because I believe in the Avs more than you do, I think.
I'm biased. I'll acknowledge it.
It's fair. I don't think Minnesota's better than Colorado. I don't think Dallas is better than Colorado.
All Western teams, again. The West is where it's at.
Tampa doesn't sell me necessarily. Like, I'm always going to expect Tampa to be a threat for the conference finals because John Cooper, Andrei Vasilevsky, Nikita Kucherov, like, these are the best of the best. And then we talk about that power play. You know, St. Louis likes concepts. The Tampa Bay Lightning power play is the most systematic, deadly power play in the last, like, 10 years in the NHL consistently.
Even
this
when
system
they were
is
bad.
Ridiculous. Even when they were bad.
When they were dog trash,
yes.
they that
still
power play
mediocre.
Looked
Yeah.
That power play looked the same. Exactly the same. Like, nothing. They would literally – I would love to know how many of their goals in the past couple seasons have come from that power play because – that was their saving grace, is their special.
Well, I can tell you their power play won them their Stanley Cups.
For sure. And special teams really. We always talk about, you know, what makes a Stanley Cup winning team, and it's everything. But I think we underestimate sometimes special teams. Mm-hmm. Like, you do need good 5-on-5. I know that from the Rangers, but I also know from the Rangers that you can win a whole series if you just got a good power play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I looked at Tampa. They're always going to be a bit of a threat. Then the rest of the Atlantic doesn't sell me whatsoever. I don't think the Leafs are a playoff team. The Red Wings don't sell me. They just don't sell me. Screw the Wiser plan. I don't care. It's not working. I know it's working, but I don't see them as a true cup contender. Just like I really don't see the Habs as a true cup contender. And if we're talking about the Atlantic Division, I think the Habs are the second best team in the Atlantic Division.
It's funny. I predicted them to win the division this year, right, but I don't know if they'll catch up Tampa at this point. I mean, Tampa can go through a lull, but...
Yeah, well, Tampa's on an 8-game winning streak.
Yeah.
That's what's... The streakiness that we're seeing out of Tampa is probably the part that should worry you the most. Because in the playoffs, streakiness can kill.
I mean, this is the thing, is that, like, most of these teams in the East are literally just a win streak away from getting, like, third in their division. You know, it's so close. The wild card changes every single day, basically.
Every day. Yeah.
So it's really anyone's game, but is anyone up to the challenge? I don't know. The Islanders are too green. Like, that is just – they're barely just getting back on their feet after getting Schaefer, and you can't really – you make the playoffs, sure, but I don't know, like – You can't just...
Not a cup contender.
You can't rely on Schaefer and Sorokin in a dream. You know? Like, Lou Lamoriello might not be there anymore, but his ghost still lingers. He's very much alive. He just is a very haunting man. But yeah, none of these teams... The Caps, the Penguins, Devils...
Pretenders is the term for these teams. These are pretenders.
Panthers are not even close.
Right. I guess half the team's injured. Let's see what happens, I guess. So remember, Sasha Barkov is probably the best two-way center in the NHL.
I don't think there's competition there.
Right. Losing him for a season is going to be impactful.
Yeah.
But they were also never a regular season team, right?
Well, that's the thing, too. And also, like, you don't know what moves they're going to pull at the deadline with Barkov on reserve.
Oh, yeah.
And Tkachuk's coming back this weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, so I don't know. The East is uninspiring. The West is where it's at. I mean, the San Jose Sharks are in and out of a playoff spot, so good for Macklin Celebrini. Oh, gosh, that is... If you need a pick-me-up, just go watch whatever they're doing on Instagram,
yeah,
basically.
Just go watch their Twitter feed, absolutely. Yeah, crazy fight last night.
Really?
With Ryan Reeves and Matthew Olivier. Ryan Reeves
Ooh,
got
those are heavyweights.
Knocked out. Smell ya.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if he returned to the game, actually, but he shouldn't have. He should have been put on concussion watch. And for the record, I want to criticize the NBC Sharks play-by-play guys. One of the worst fight – as a guy who used to do play-by-play, I feel more emboldened to say this. One of the worst fight calls I've ever heard in my life. I talk about my morning oats with – more excitement than they talked about what is one of the best hockey fights of the last 5 years. Embarrassing. They should have been thinking about that the entire drive home. Sorry for the criticism. Sorry to get on airwaves and be critical. But you make too much money and the sport's too exciting.
Think about it. They're from California. They're probably just like, they're a little like, you know, granola-y. They're like, ooh, this is a little much for my almond milk sensibilities. I don't know why I'm saying that. Like,
the Sharks
why am
are
I
too woke? Is this your take?
You can't call fights anymore because of woke.
Oh, the woke God. Mind virus. Okay. We're going to an ad break.
Yes. On that note.
You're listening on CJLO 1690, North-South Hockey, every Wednesday.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is Patrick Holland.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms. Whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with Bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
You're listening to North-South Hockey on CJLO 1690 AM. So we're getting into some of the cultural side of hockey now, because there's always something going on with the NHL off the ice, unfortunately, sometimes. But we're kind of at the end of the heated rivalry wave. Took the world by storm, which no one ever expected, but... it's been really interesting to see. There's been so much discourse from that show. For anyone who's not familiar, this is a Crave show. It's an adaptation of Rachel Reed's best-selling romance series about gay hockey players. And there was a great Canadian product, I will say. And it's inspired a lot of conversations about homophobia in hockey, in men's hockey specifically, and, you know, what does the NHL need for players to feel more comfortable to come out? How do we fix the culture? And what's really interesting is the NHL finally did comment on Heated Rivalry. An anonymous ref said this has been the most unique driver of fans to the sport. And it was some executive, he said, welcome, like, we hope to see you at the rink. Which was basically like a, give us your money, please.
Yeah, yeah.
A very shallow acknowledgement of it. Every acknowledgement so far.
Also, calling it unique feels like a slight. I understand. It's the proper use of the word.
Unique is a nice way of not dropping a slur. You know?
That's what it feels like, yeah.
It really is like, oh, you're so special. Which word can I say nowadays? But the point of the matter is like, some teams have started like playing what we're now apparently using as our intro song every week. I just did it as a bit, but now all the things she said, all right, that's going to be...
We're committed. Unless you guys have a better song, all of our thousands of dedicated listeners.
Oh, yes, our millions. So the teams have started playing that song because it's featured in the show at their games. They've put like
every team plays this multiple times a game now, yes.
They do joke, like the Bruins did some jokes on social, I believe, about it because it's a Boston-Montreal rivalry in that show.
Right.
And the Habs actually played the trailer for it at their Pride night, but it's just a lot of window dressing and very shallow encouragement from this very regressive culture. And Canadian actor François Arnaud, Quebecois cinema legend, François Arnaud, called out on a red carpet interview the other day how the failing NHL is using heated rivalry to draw in audiences. And he was very catty gay man about it. I loved it. He was like, I think it's great, but I just hope it has actual change in the league. And that is the debate, is like, is this show actually going to make it easier for players to come out? Is it going to make it easier for these conversations to be had, for queer fans to feel more included? And you asked me what I actually think. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know.
Zane Perret can't even call his teammates boring.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, this is too much of a distraction, saying that the locker room isn't freaking Miami.
No one's clambering to come out after that,
no.
Or any of the, or look to the entire history of the 110
right.
year history of
yeah.
the NHL. It's hard to change such a rotted culture overnight. And I love hockey. I call it rotted because I want it better for it, because I know how great this sport is and how good it can be for people, the things that it can teach you, the people it brings in your life. Just the warmth and kindness that this community is capable of. I want more of that. I want to see it grow and for everyone to be able to experience the positives of this game. Right now, it just feels like a lot of rainbow marketing. You know, like the way that
hockey is for everybody.
The way that companies will, like, Target will have their pride color. Not anymore, actually. And that's an American brand. Oh, I'm sorry. But, like, I don't know. Do you have
We had Target for a period
for a hot
of time.
Minute, yeah.
It's like if Zellers had a – to all my Canadians out there, it's like if Zellers had a pride lineup.
Yeah. Like,
shout out Zellers.
All of these companies will, like, you know, have their pride. But I will never forget. I went to New York City Pride one year, and there were like tons of these, like, they're just handing out rainbow flags, obviously. Yeah. And I pick one up off the street, and it has the Amazon logo on it because the parade.
Happy Pride, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
It's there's a great Grace Kuhlenschmidt, the comedian, has a great video about this, which I can't remember how it goes, but it is basically like, I've struggled with my sexuality my whole life, but so that's why I'm happy to partner with like a BlackRock right now. Like it's ridiculous, and that's what the league is doing. Is
me and Ozempic want to wish you a happy Pride. Love yourself the way you are.
That's what the NHL is doing, is basically they're like, well, we can make a mint off of these really hyped kids who want to buy merch and like get really into Macklin Celebrity and Will Smith. It's like they just see it as a money-making opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is so unfortunate because...
You're saying capitalism doesn't care about us?
What? Oh. This is the first time I'm hearing it. Wait, what?
I say just shut up about it. Let it trickle down.
Oh, man. It's... The thing is that we're going to end on kind of a somber note because this story did just come out.
Yeah.
Part of why I'm so hesitant to like say that this is – I think it's good that we're having these conversations. Do I think it's going to do anything? No, because it was just ESPN just put out the breaking news that the Anaheim Ducks and the NHL were named in a lawsuit filed by a former Ducks employee who accused the Ducks of – she was sexually harassed by one of her coworkers. While she worked for the organization, she was like just an IT coordinator. Yeah. And someone, one man particularly sexually harassed her. She reported it to HR and they said definitely like this is a violation. Nothing was done about it. So she got fed up with it and decided to leave her position at the Ducks after a few years. And she went to the league office and started working for them in IT. And then apparently what is alleged in this lawsuit is that the Ducks organization found out she was working for the NHL and they called up one of her bosses, one of the executives there, and they said that she was a victim of sexual harassment and a witness to ongoing legal actions between the Ducks and the NHL. There was a different lawsuit filed by another Ducks employee at the time, and they allegedly lied and said that she was the one filing the suit and then was randomly fired after being accused of hacking that executive's email. And but it was the allegations claim that it was very shadily done, very like if you read it, it's like textbook bad. It is comically cartoonishly evil if this is true. And it's, you know, it's not surprising to me. The Ducks just hired Joel Quenneville, who for anyone who doesn't know, Joel Quenneville was one of the key people involved in the Chicago Blackhawks when they had one of their video coaches molesting players.
Yeah.
And he was part of the cover-up there. And
a major part of the cover-up.
Major part. Like I believe it was either him or it was – I believe it was Quenneville, not Bowman, who wrote a letter of recommendation, a reference letter to a high school where that video coach then went and molested more children.
Yep.
So that's the coach of the Anaheim Ducks right now. Are we surprised that their workplace sexual harassment policies are not great? Can't say that I'm, you know, oh my God, I would have never thought. But this is the kind of – this is the give and take of hockey. You get like a moment like heated rivalry where it's like, wow, what like a crazy phenomenon. What a crazy moment for the sport. This sport is going to be forever changed now. The new fans that are coming in, this is back in the mainstream. Like you said, we're taking what the NBA is lacking. But then you get these stories. Then you get, you know, your Carter Hart signings and all of this stuff. I think it's very hard to be positive at all times about this sport. I don't know if you have anything to add there, but I just – this is the kind of stuff – while we talk about the games, we talk about all the stuff on the ice. So much of this game is more than that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with this story is – it sounds made up. Like, this is stereotypical. This is exactly what we talk about, and it still happens.
Yeah. It's look, I wish the woman filing the suit all the best. And yeah, just keep in mind that we love this game. We just want it. We want more for it. We want things to change. So I think that's going to do it for us this week on North-South Hockey. I've been Avery Beaumont, and you've been Will Shukri, and we will see you next Wednesday at noon for another installment.
Drive safe.
To CJLO News.
Hands off Venezuela. Death to America.